Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Bethy Hungerford, and you're listening to Friends with Recipes, the podcast featuring your favorite people and their favorite recipes. Today's episode brought us northeast of London near the port town of Ipswich, which is the home of today's guest, Sally Emsley. Originally from South Africa, Sally has just recently moved out of Hackney in London to start a new life for her family in the countryside. Not only did we get a glimpse of Sally's incredible stockroom for her secondhand designer clothing business, Manifesto Women, we also took a brisk country walk to a gorgeous abandoned church. We returned just in time to taste Sally's cozy chicken soup. Okay, so we are here in beautiful Ipswich. This feels like the middle of nowhere.
It is.
In a good way, not in a bad way at all. But it feels like we should have been on the train for 4 hours to get here, but it was just like an hour.
Yeah, it is, and it's an hour drive as well. I think that's the misconception, certainly I had when I was living in Hackney, that anywhere beyond Zone 2 was very far. And then you realise you actually take an hour to get to West London.
Yeah.
From East London, or an hour to get here. So it's actually the distance. It just feels a lot longer psychologically than it actually is in reality.
We live in Dulwich, and it takes me an hour and a half. I give myself an hour and a half to get basically anywhere.
Anywhere,
in London.
I know.
Yeah, so if I could be out, you know, here.
It literally is in the middle of nowhere, though. It takes a lot of getting used to, and it's so dark at this time of year because there are no streetlights.
Yeah.
And I don't know where I'm going yet, so I often find myself driving along. Literally, I could be in Bulgaria, like down little country roads,
yeah.
Following my sat nav, going turn left, and you're literally on gravel path in the pitch black. Yeah, with absolutely zero idea. And actually, what happened to me the other day, which is another little country thing that you don't have when you're living in a big city, is I started running out of petrol my children in the back, in the middle of farm roads. And what suddenly happens is you'll be driving along a route you're familiar with, and next thing you know, they've closed the road. So now you're running out of petrol in the pitch black with your kids in the back and diverting off into fields unknown. Yeah, an absolute nightmare. So I must admit that was a little bit of a crunch point. Like, we're not in Kansas anymore.
Although, I grew up in a small farming town, and I do remember running out of petrol quite a few times. Out on country roads.
I know.
Middle of nowhere. But hold on, I don't know what you're making.
Yeah, so I am actually, well, you know, I'm denied about this because, as you can tell from my accent, I grew up in South Africa, and we kind of were stuck in the dark ages when it came to cooking. You know, pasta felt quite gourmet.
Okay.
In fact, I don't even think it was around until I was probably in my teens.
Pasta.
Yeah, I mean, we were in the middle. Don't forget. So I'm in my quite substantially into my 40s now, and I grew up in the deepest, darkest apartheid. So we had global sanctions.
Yeah,
rightly so.
Right.
You know, so we had to rely on what we had within South Africa.
So what did you have in South Africa?
We tended to get everything, sort of global trends, about a decade late. So in the 70s, we kind of had 60s foods, you know, like real basic boiled potatoes and meat, you know, and sort of the meat and two veg kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. And then in the 80s, it got really 70s. So we had all the all the porcupine, the pineapple porcupines with cheese and et cetera.
Which I didn't know about until we moved here.
Yeah, so there's so much. I was thinking about it, like, my God, my food growing up. You know, I was trying to go through sort of my backstory of recipes to bring you a recipe from childhood, but it's just nothing I would ever, ever eaten all. I mean, the microwave as well was massive news. And I remember going to a cookery course with my mum. I must have been 10 or 12, somewhere around there, where it was a microwave cookery course. And yeah, they taught us how to cook a joint of meat in the microwave.
Yeah, my grandma went to one of those classes.
I mean, what were we thinking? Yeah. You know, so I was like, okay, you know what?
So gross now.
So at disgusting.
The time, I was like, oh my gosh.
I know, this is America. Yeah. We can cook dinner in 5 minutes.
So are you making microwave beef for me today?
No. So I decided against that.
Okay. And,
but also then I was thinking the type of cook I am is that I love just trying new things all the time. I'm a competent but not brilliant cook. Mm-hmm. But I just, you know, a new recipe will catch my eye and I'll make it. And I actually made this for the first time last week and I just loved it so much. It's from, do you know Lizzie Loves? Lizzie Loves Healthy, I think is her, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to convince her to be on the podcast.
Okay, well, this is one of her, this is one of hers.
Great.
I saw it on her Instagram feed, and it's basically one pot chicken. Mm-hmm. It feels like a perfect winter recipe. It's so tasty, so easy. Literally throw everything in a pot, we'll go for a walk while it's cooking, and come back and have the most delicious chicken kind of broth soup with a few noodles thrown in.
I'm seeing a whole chicken.
Yeah,
on
you
the
just literally throw.
You put the entire chicken
thing
in the pot.
I mean, I would never. I think is it called braising when you boil meat? Is that what braising means? What does braise mean?
I think braising is in the oven.
So there's some term.
Wait.
No, that's roasting. I think I don't know. There's some term, and I can't remember what it is. Basically,
Siri, what's
braising? Yeah, boiling. It's when you boil meat, which sounds absolutely disgusting, and I have never tried it for exactly that reason.
Yeah,
but it's delicious.
But it makes sense because that's how you make stock. Because the bones and all the other bits add to the flavor.
Yeah, so I've made stock like that, but with chicken carcasses, mm-hmm. not actually eating the chicken that you've then boiled. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So we'll hopefully. Okay. Fingers
we'll
crossed.
Yeah. We'll find out how amazing it is.
Yes. And it's got loads of, I mean, I sort of, when I didn't have half the ingredients she suggested the first mm-hmm. time I made it. So it's one of those recipes, which is brilliant because you can just throw in
that's perfect.
Whatever. You know, if you've got broccoli instead of celery or leeks or whatever, it's just.
So it's essentially a chicken soup.
It's essentially a chicken soup.
Great.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
So there's a pot here on the hob.
Yes.
Is the hob on? Or that's the.
No.
No. Okay.
No.
Something's warm. Oh, it's the kettle. So you've got a massive pot and you have a whole trussed chicken in there.
Yes, I'm putting a massive bunch of parsley.
So you've not chopped it up at all.
No.
It's just a handful of parsley.
So all the vegetables, as you would with any normal stock that you're making, mm-hmm. is you throw them away at the end.
Yeah.
So this is just basically
this is the same.
Broth. Yes.
Oh,
so this is to get you basically cook the chicken and get the broth. So you retain. Please make sure I retain it at the end and don't actually accidentally pour it out with all the vegetables because then we really are screwed.
Which I nearly, have lovely chicken sandwiches.
I nearly did the last time. Just
lopped
it all through a sieve into the sink. So then onions and then we need...
So you've not chopped the onions. You've just kind of quartered it.
Quartered it. And then I'm just going to quickly peel the carrots and put some carrots in. Everything's super roughly chopped because it's in there for flavor.
Yeah.
Lizzie Loves Healthy. She's probably going to look at this and think, God, she's bastardizing my recipe.
No, but that's load of rubbish.
I can't believe she's doing this. God, I hope I don't mess it up. I really do.
Well,
okay. So
but it seems like this type of recipe is really hard to mess up.
Yes, although I mean,
because how could you mess it up if you undercooked the chicken or something?
Yeah, pour the stock away by mistake.
Pour the stock away. But even then you have a delicious chicken.
Totally. No, I mean, it's super simple. Exactly. So, and I actually bought her book. I got so excited by how tasty. Where is it? Here we go. So she brought out a book recently. I don't actually think is in this book, but it's super, you know, it's nothing fancy or fussy. It's just really delicious, easy recipes. And what I really like about it as well is there's a massive focus on nutrition.
Yeah, you know, she have a big nutritious.
Well, I think I think that is her training, isn't it? As a dietitian, I think.
That would make sense.
Yes.
Just given, you know, watching her stories.
Yeah. So you know why things are being included and what you're getting out of it. And what I really don't have a sweet tooth at all, but I sometimes like having puddings or desserts. And she does these kind of sugar-free you know, everything from these, which is sugar-free toffee apples to...
Sugar-free toffee apples? Yeah, How do you even do that?
I think she uses, what does she use? Processed sugar, rice syrup. So she doesn't, I think, and I might be getting this wrong, it's, everything is gluten-free, processed sugar-free,
she's using coconut palm sugar. Okay.
Yeah. So that she substitutes in ingredients all the time. I'm pretty sure it's all gluten-free as well.
Amazing.
So even if you don't follow it exactly, you know what I mean? It's the ideas as well. Like, I mean, I know it sounds ridiculous, but I've never thought of using sweet potato for a...
shepherd's pie.
You know what I mean? Or topping on a... You know, it's just little substitutions that you can do.
And I love that these all look... like, it's not like baking where you have to put in this. You have to put in that. All of these look really flexible.
Well, that's what she says. She says she's not a natural baker because of exactly that fussiness that puts her off. She's more of a throw it together and see what magic happens kind of thing. And her, and which makes her recipe so accessible.
Yeah. I need to get this cookbook. Yeah. So we're talking about, just to be clear to anybody listening, we're talking about Lizzie Loves Healthy on Instagram.
Yeah.
And she's Lizzie King, and she's come out with this book called Healthy Family Food. Oh, here it says, naturally gluten and sugar-free meals you'll all enjoy. And she's really lovely.
Yeah. Totally worth it.
Yeah, I need to get that. I love that you have all of your cookbooks out. I love looking through cookbooks.
I know. I read them like actual books.
This is my favorite thing, though. I got goosebumps. Look, I literally have goosebumps. This is my favorite thing. So
I pull all the recipes out, and this is how
it's like three folders.
Yeah, some desserts.
Where you've
some...
clearly just pulled things out of.
And cooked them, and then keep them, and I tend to cook.
Magazines and newspapers, recipes.
Yes.
Out of magazines
and
newspapers.
And there are things dating back from like 20 years there that I've just kept, you know, some like... You know when you first start out cooking and you don't even know how to make a pancake. So it was like my grand's pancake recipe and, you know, all that sort of thing. And then as I've obviously got better at cooking, it's more elaborate recipes.
Yeah.
But it's literally, so this is a leek. This is my grand's leek and potato soup. This is when I think I was even a teenager here. Because this was when I was still living in South Africa.
Amazing. Oh my goodness. I love this sort of thing. Yeah, this is why I started Friends with Recipes, is because people used to share.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, they would have these, you know, kind of compilations, like from church or school or whatever, of everybody's favorite recipes in a cookbook all together. And I just love the idea of just...
Yeah, my mum's still got those. So she's everywhere. Where she's got all her recipes from. So it'll be like, you know, Diana's... beetroot, whatever, you know, Mabel's, what, and then, it's amazing. So you know, like, the legacy of every recipe.
Yeah.
It is. It's incredible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that.
So that, I think we can just leave to bubble away. And let me just have a look. Where is that recipe gone? How long? I think it's an hour to an hour and a half.
Yeah, it already smells good.
Yeah. So we can do...
Well, I would love to take a look, and I know we're going on a little country walk, but I would love to just take a look in your...
Yes, great.
Because you work out of your home.
Yes. So I have a clothing business called Manifesto Women, which you know, and I have to say that you were one of my first ever supporters.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
That's a surprise
to me.
Yeah, well, you know you have... I mean, you've started various businesses yourself. You know you start them on a wing and a prayer. Mm-hmm. You know, you think it's a great idea. You have no idea.
Yeah, if it's going to...
If it's going to fly. And some do and some
don't. If you're just going to lose a ton of money.
Yeah, and some of them through no fault of your own. It's all the wrong timing or whatever it is. It's like there's so many variables that come into play. And I actually started off with kids, which was working fine, but it was not a money spinner. And, you know, obviously if you're going to be working, you need it to be financially viable. Yeah. But the whole time I was doing Manifesto Kids, which is secondhand clothing, I basically, to take a step back, I'm absolutely passionate about the environment and sustainability. And I think fashion, as we all increasingly understand, is one of the major culprits to all various manner of ills. From, you know, production practices and unfair working and payment, etc., right way through to environmental pollution, through manufacturing processes, but as well as waste. And I come from a strategy background, which I did for 20 years, and I kind of took a long, hard look at my life and realized that my legacy was non-existent. You know, I was working for corporates telling them how to make more money. You know, it's basically just screwing the consumer with, you know, it just suddenly felt so wrong. And I think as the world moved, you know, I think people were becoming more aware. I certainly was becoming more aware. So I started Kids. It wasn't necessarily viable financially, but loads of people kept saying, when are you doing a woman? So I thought, well...
Was it not viable financially because you couldn't make the price point high enough to make it worth all of the
various
effort?
So, yes. So the issue with kids' clothes is that the margins are so low. Mm-hmm. So you have to sell massive amounts of volume. So what I... To do that, you obviously can't do it yourself. Mm-hmm. As an individual. So I launched it as a marketplace, which is a peer-to-peer marketplace. So Amazon essentially is a business to consumer marketplace, whereas something like eBay is a peer to peer or consumer to consumer. So the issues there is that the software is so complex because there's nothing actually exists in off the peg. Mm-hmm. So I had to build the whole thing. So I mean, stumped up masses of cash to do that, and it had niggly functionality. But the primary thing, and it's so interesting, is that people buy kids' clothes new or they get passed down. So people tend to, you know, someone will get, you know, you'll take a whole bag of kids' clothes to
your mate.
And then people do a big shop, say at Zara or H&M. Mm-hmm. Oh, we need, you know, your kid will grow out of everything and you'll go to H&M and just buy 10 pairs of leggings, 10 t-shirts, whatever, which is not amazing, but I totally get why it happens. Mm-hmm. So that was also a factor. And I think as well, targeting a group who tend to be in the poorest time of their lives, which is what new mums are, is not amazing. Not the cleverest thing. And absolutely, I do think that there is a massive need for it and there are lots of companies doing incredible things in the space. But I just know that they are all struggling to make it work financially. But women, obviously, you can charge a lot more. Mm-hmm. People tend to buy on a whim more than they do... for kids as well, which tends to be born out of necessity.
So the way your business works is somebody sends you a box of clothes, essentially. So you receive this box of clothes. How much in any given box is going on your site?
Well, initially I was just taking whatever came at me. You know what it's like when you start a business. You just say yes.
You figure it out.
To everything.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And now I've realized that because I am quite particular about taste and I know what sells, sometimes it's not even, I sometimes love an item, but I have to say to the person, I just don't think my site is right for that piece.
Well, you've said that to me.
Exactly, I did.
Which makes
now
sense.
What I'm doing, instead of getting the stuff and then having, as you can see, I'm already running out of space, is that I get people to take photos before they send things to me.
That's
and then
perfect.
I can cull things at the starting point.
So you're not getting a massive...
box, you know, of unusable
fur
things.
Coat that you're not going to sell that was expensive to get here and will be expensive to get back.
Yeah. I've got two fur coats. It's so interesting you bring that up because I did a poll.
They're real fur.
They're real fur.
No, I saw your poll on Instagram.
This one is mink. I'd an odd because there's a real thing. I mean, It's already made. I'm absolutely against the production of new fur, obviously. But there's this part of me thinks, well, this is in existence. What, you know, and actually, although if you do, and this is a good point to include, is that if anyone does have real fur that they don't know what to do with, apparently animal shelters love furs. For abandoned puppies and everything.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, so then they sleep on the... Yeah, so at least it goes to use rather than just being lobbed.
Because these two jackets that you just pulled out are absolutely gorgeous.
I know,
but if I were to wear that out and somebody goes, "Oh my God, is that real fur?"
You'd probably lie and say no.
But it is a shame because that is a gorgeous jacket that's got to be 60 years old. How old is that?
Yeah, I don't know. These are both mink.
Oh my God.
So that's obviously
an incredibly
a huge no-no
soft,
now.
But but it already exists.
I think for the record that I've decided not to sell it.
You've decided not to.
No,
okay.
I think you know what. It's an ambiguous area, and I think if something's ambiguous, it's probably ambiguous for a reason. And I feel like you know we're in this process with so much, aren't we, as a nation and as a world of sort of understanding. I think it's one of those things that we'll look back on in 10 years time and be horrified that we even considered it.
Right, sure.
So I just think
right now we don't know which way it's gonna go and...
I mean, I was chatting to other vintage sellers and they were saying, because I'm new to this industry, but some of the people that I collaborate with have been in it for 20, 30 years. And they were saying it's so interesting because 10 years ago, they used to go and do markets with piles of vintage fur and now they don't at all anymore. So interesting. So it's definitely, and it's right. That is, it's, you know what, it's right. It just feels wasteful.
It does feel wasteful, especially when it's that beautiful.
I know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, but I would be uncomfortable wearing that.
Yeah. Interesting, hey? Yeah. Oh, and so, someone else, I had loads of interesting comments coming through. Someone said, look, they personally don't have an issue with it, but it's too hot to handle, so don't go there. And someone else said that she has inherited loads of vintage furs from her gran and every now and again wears one, but is terrified she's going to have a bucket of paint poured on her every time she goes out. And it breaks my heart. And then you see people and they'll go, and you know, there are dresses here that you, let me try and find something that I, you know, is a good example. You know, this is a silk Philip Lim dress, and that price is, so it was, it would cost £580 new. Oh, I'm selling it for 60. That's the same price as you'd get a polyester Topshop or Zara number four. And it kills me that someone will go and buy a high street that's, you know, that's questionable from the entire way along the kind of production process, and also not, they won't necessarily feel very good that they'll wear for one season and then wear it. Where's this? It's so beautiful.
It's such gorgeous quality.
I know. And you'll wear this for years and years and years, and that's the interesting. So it's really, you know, trying to get people to understand that kind of equation.
Yeah, but I think you'll get there because your stuff is so beautiful. And so well curated, but that's what it comes down to. That's why people follow, you know, some of these fashion Instagrammers have such a huge following, because they're curating it for someone like me that's a bit fashion dumb. You know, I need that.
It's so interesting because I often think that you say that, because I have often wondered why some of the sort of fashion people on Instagram have such a massive following, because it's just them every day in an outfit. Which for me,
for you, you I don't, but it's not for you.
No, but that's
for me.
No. It's so interesting. You've just given me a real insight.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The church Sally took me to on our walk has sat abandoned for a while now. There's been some vandalism, but it's mostly the same as it was when it was still being used, and it is beautiful. So I've been singing in churches since I was a kid, and it's difficult for me to go into a church with an acoustic such as this one and not sing. So please indulge me for a moment as I test the acoustic and then get a bit gushy about music making. I promise it's quick.
So it's just always unlocked, this church?
Yeah. It's amazing. Unfortunately, there has been a little bit of vandalism in one of the back rooms.
But oh, no.
Yeah, but by and large, it's...
Oh, my goodness.
It's untouched.
Yeah. Wow. Oh my gosh. It's just so cool.
I know.
We'll post some pictures on the blog, but this is like, we're in this tiny little alcove with this beautiful stone baptistry with carvings all over it and this checkerboard floor that is just covered in dirt and rock and soot. Just from...
age.
Just from age. I can't be in a church and not sing
something. I was just about to say, I'm waiting for you to break into song. Please do.
I could just do... I'm trying to think... Okay, of the Baroque pieces, I know.
Okay.
What could I do off the top of my head? This is the wrong key. Hold on. I'll do.
That was incredible.
It was incredibly in the incredibly wrong key.
Doesn't matter. It was amazing.
Let me do one more. This is from older. This is medieval.
So impressive. Oh my God. Should I have a go?
Yeah, go.
No. Definitely not.
I love singing in churches because...
the acoustics.
Well, but then I'm now joining a line of thousands of people over hundreds of years who have also made music in this exact acoustic.
Yeah, it's
true. It blows my mind.
Yeah, I get it.
This is why I love old churches.
Yeah.
There's just that
sense
history
of history
here.
And place. Yes, exactly.
Oh, I'm so glad you took us here.
I know, I knew you'd love it.
I do. So what we haven't really talked much about, which is something I really find fascinating, is so you kind of mentioned that things were behind,
yes,
food-wise
in apartheid years.
Right, in South Africa.
Yeah.
And so what did you grow up eating? Like what would a weeknight?
I mean, it was really very traditional cooking. And I don't think my family were an anomaly. I think it's you know, you never know really.
But so
I think
meat and potatoes.
Meat
you
and
said.
Potatoes is, so you might have heard of the term braai, which is basically a barbecue.
Okay.
A braai place.
Yeah, right.
As you
boom, yes.
Cook meat. And that's massive and always has been. And then we've got
And that's you cook it outside?
Outside. Because, okay. I mean, the climate is so mild.
Yeah.
And there's a sausage called boerewors, which is basically farmer's sausage.
Uh-huh.
I don't think there's anything like it here, which is, actually everyone loves it. All my English friends who I've introduced to it do love it. And it's very meat heavy, basically. There's biltong, which you've probably heard of.
But you wouldn't eat that for a meal.
No. So we'd sit down and have boerewors and steak. And do you call them chops here? Maybe cutlets here.
Oh, like pork chops?
Much more refined, yes. Yes, so it would be, yes, exactly. Or lamb chops.
Okay.
Massive lamb farming in South Africa.
So loads of meat.
Loads of meat.
Would you have multiple different kinds of meat?
I know,
at
yes.
one meal?
A mixed grill. I mean, that's a South African staple.
That's a thing. Okay.
And if you really push the bird out, you go surf and turf.
Okay. Which is so what would the surf be then?
So the surf would be, you might have a prawn sauce on your
prawn
steak.
Sauce. What is that?
Well,
like
cooked prawns, so they're all shrimps in like a garlic and lemon butter sauce.
And then you pour that on the meat.
On the meat, yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Look, to be fair, I mean, I'm painting a grim picture. It's obviously progressed.
No, it's not grim. It's just different than what I'm used to.
Well, it's progressed a lot. I mean, this is, remember, I'm in the 70s and 80s. So it's very, very international now, the cuisine. Like you would find in London, you know, you have everything under
everything
the sun.
Everything now. But I find it interesting to know, like, what you ate growing up.
Yes.
So like on a Wednesday night, it would mostly be like meat.
Yeah, meat or lots of like traditional thing. Like I remember chicken a la king. Did you ever get that?
I've heard of it, but I don't actually know what it
God,
is.
Oh, it's terrible. I can't remember the exact thing, but it's something like chicken and peas and a sort of milky cream sauce with pasta, but you know, bland boarding school stuff. And you know, lots of things like shepherd's pie, what do we call it? We didn't call it shepherd's pie, we called it something else, and I can't remember.
But it was basically an English style shepherd's pie.
And yes, and then there's this thing which is horrific, which South Africans love, and it's called babuati. And it is essentially, if you imagine a savory trifle, is essentially what we're talking about.
Okay.
It's like all the foods that shouldn't be together in one dish, which is curried mince with egg, raisins.
Uh-huh.
And I think there might be a potato topping, but I can't remember. But it's just dreadful. I mean, a lot of South Africans will shoot me when they hear this.
But it doesn't sound unlike Coronation Chicken, to be honest.
Oh, yes. It's a sort of curried-y, sweet and savory all bunged together. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so Americans won't know what Coronation Chicken is, but it's chicken in a curry sauce with raisins and... So it's the same idea, but you're saying it's beef.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a staple of my kind of later childhood, so in my teens, was going mussel picking, and then you all...
Going what?
Mussel picking.
Oh, mussel picking, yeah.
So, and then we'd cook them on the beach in a garlic and lemon butter and eat them. We've got this thing in South Africa as well called a skottel.
Okay.
Which is essentially... I don't know if you have them in other countries or cultures, I'm not sure. Which is basically like a gas canister with a pole attached to it. And then like a frying pan, but like a really, almost like a...
Wok?
A wok, but a flat wok.
Okay.
And everywhere you go in South Africa, any event, everyone pitches up with their skottels and cooks. It tends to be meat, but often breakfast, like pork sausages and eggs on the skottel. Or you go to the beach and you use it to cook your mussels on the beach.
I've never heard of that. I mean,
it is a most bizarre concept.
Not in a bizarre way, but just in a way that, like, well, why don't more people do that? Because you'd show up with like what is that called? A hibachi or like a little grill that you would put meat on the grill, but you wouldn't do it like in a wok bowl. Kind of
I mean, they are
situation.
Hugely useful, but they do feel incredibly 70s, you know.
Okay.
It's totally something.
Do people still use them?
Yes. Well, interestingly, because I posted, you know, in sort of nostalgic trip, I posted some photos on Facebook, you know, back in the days we were all on the beach. And then I made some flippant remark about, you know, the old skottel. And everyone was like, oh, no, they're still alive and well. We all still use them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a genius invention. So, so there's that. And then we had, I mean, I'm sure vegetarians everywhere in the 70s and 80s had a bit of a raw deal.
Because it's mostly meat.
Meat. And then, and we had, it was always, when you go into any restaurant, there was one vegetarian dish that was the veg platter. And it was literally, you tend to be a steak board, just to really rub it in. Like a wooden steak board, filled with like the most basic vegetables. So it was always, do you get gem squash here?
Gem squash. Like, gem lettuce, but I've not heard.
Yeah, so you get like, it's almost like, I mean, I haven't seen it actually, to be interestingly, in supermarkets here, but it's almost like a kind of a sort of a pumpkin-y flesh. So it'd be that with a knob of butter in it. And some creamed spinach. Remember the days where there was creamed spinach?
Yeah, I actually love creamed spinach.
But basically, you know, you get this assortment of vegetables and that's it. That was your option. So it would be incredibly hard to be a vegetarian in South Africa back then.
And then, so that would be dinner.
Yes.
What would you do for breakfast? Growing up.
There's another thing that's quite South African. There's, I think you get it here now, called, you get ProNutro here, right?
I've never heard of that, but maybe Brits know what it is.
So essentially, it's like, you get oats here that you make porridge out of. Uh-huh. In South Africa, it tends to be made from maize.
Okay.
Kind of a maize meal. And
is it like grits in America?
Yes. So it's like, or polenta in Italian, yes.
Yeah.
And people would make porridge, and the African community call it putu. It's a staple of sort of an African diet. It's either eaten on its own or used. Actually, it's cooked quite hard, and then they use it to sort of almost make balls of it, and then use it to pick up sauces from stews or.
But you would eat it kind of as a porridge for breakfast.
As a porridge.
And what is it? Sweet or savory?
It's sweet at breakfast time, but you make it savory in the evenings. But interestingly, it's only more recently, actually, almost with the adoption of more Italian ways of cooking, etc., that it's become
savory because that's how the Italians
exactly
eat it. Okay, so we've just come back into your house, and not the whole house because it's a massive house, but this room smells
so delicious.
No, it
does. It permeates the whole house. I was reading the comments on, you know, because Lizzie posted this on Instagram.
Yeah.
And everyone was saying just the smell is amazing. Mm.
It just smells comforting.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's exactly that. It's very kind of, it just smells nutritious and wholesome.
Yeah.
Right, so what I'm going to do now is, that nearly finished cooking, so I'm just chopping a few little bits and pieces that we can throw into the...
Well, these are baby leeks.
Stock, yeah. From South Africa, there we go.
Oh, there we go.
Planned, obviously.
It's on brand.
Yeah, and I'm going to do some leeks. It says carrots, but I actually don't like the idea of carrots in it. So I don't actually know if I've got broccoli. I might just see if I have some, because I think it's nicer with a bit of broccoli thrown in. I might try some courgettes. Do you think courgettes would go nicely?
Yeah. I feel like this is the type of meal that you can just throw anything in.
Yes, actually there's a courgette. I might peel it, you know, rather than slice it.
Yeah, while you peel that, do you mind if I look through your refrigerator?
Yeah, go for it.
This is one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah, there's a mix of good and bad, as every household almost certainly has.
Lots of eggs. How do you make your eggs? Because you've got loads here.
I do. I love pancakes. And I'm actually from I love normal pancakes, but I also make oats, banana, and egg pancakes, which is a little protein hit.
Yeah.
Without all the white flour and everything else.
Yeah.
And milk. So that's... It's
so when you say pancakes, do you mean like what I would mean, American pancake, or do you mean...
Oh, no, but this is so interesting because actually you as Americans, the British and South Africans all have different versions.
Yeah.
So for us, a flapjack is what you would call a pancake.
Okay.
So like a thick, spongy...
American pancake.
Yeah. Which I don't know, what are they called here? What are those called?
Scottish pancake or American pancake?
I think Australians call those pikelets. And for us...
Paglets?
Paglets, yeah. And for
I've
us,
never heard
a...
Get the refrigerator open.
A pancake is a crepe. Big one.
Yeah, so when you're saying a regular pancake, you mean you make lots of crepes?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Yes.
And what do you put in the crepes?
I actually just have it super light, just with lemon juice and cinnamon. I really don't have a sweet...
Lemon juice and cinnamon?
Yeah.
I've heard lemon juice and sugar. I've not heard
lemon
juice.
You see, the thing, lots of people put sugar with it. I just don't have a sweet tooth at all. So if I make green or juice, you know, like a smoothie, I only put things like celery and broccoli.
Savory. Slightly more savory.
Yeah, cucumber to sweeten it almost kind of thing.
Yeah. But you wouldn't do like a carrot apple base because those are quite sweet.
Really sweet.
Yeah.
I struggle a lot.
Yeah. So you've also got lots of cheese.
Oh, yeah, I'm a cheese fiend.
Are you? Okay.
Yes.
You've got a lot of cheddar.
Yeah, well, that's actually more for the kids, to be honest.
Gorgonzola, that for you?
Yeah, that's for me.
And now, so as a cheese fiend, and then you have kind of these little processed slices.
Oh, that's my husband. I hold no responsibility for those things. I actually saw those this morning. I thought, I bet you Beth is going to land on those things. My bloody husband.
No, but do you know what? Do you know what? I really, because I grew up eating these, and I really prefer them on a...
burgers.
Yes.
That's what he puts them on. He was like, you can't have normal cheese. You have to have plastic cheese on a burger.
Yes, because my husband is very much a foodie.
Yes.
And he started buying those for burgers, and I was mortified having them in my fridge. And then I was like, actually, I really, really prefer it.
Yeah, no, like he's that. The same.
So you've got a lot of wrapped meats in here.
Oh, yeah. I'm afraid that is my downfall, actually. Is that I know that they're incredibly bad for you. But, you know, braisiola,
cured meats. Yeah.
You know, with all the salt and the fat. But it is my kind of that more so than sweets are my kind of
So you've got
guilty
like
pleasure.
A big hunk of, so you've got... How do you say it? Braisiola?
Well, I think, again, it's something I've only ever read, if I'm honest.
Yeah,
but braisiola is how I would say it, but I don't know if that's right.
Well, yeah, it's Italian. Braisiola. Della Valdellina.
You go for it.
All the Italian listeners are going, shut up.
It's like you're hurting my ears.
I know. So how do you eat, like you've just got, these are slices of ham. So do you do these for like
those? Actually, I don't eat ham. So that's again my husband. So that fridge is, again, not ours. Really annoying.
Yes.
He eats ham. I don't actually eat ham.
Okay. For any particular reason or you just don't
I just don't like the taste.
Yeah.
Although I'll eat chorizo. I'll eat other pork-based products.
Yeah. Lots of juices and kid... stuff, lots of lemons. What do you do with your lemons?
So I have them on absolutely everything. I love lemons. Again, it's that savory tooth. So I'll put them on anything from steak, amazing, to
lemon on steak.
Mm-hmm. To any soups. Usually I'd lob a few lemons in here. I'm not going to just because it's my, like, a, you know, I know, I appreciate it. Not everyone likes lemon with everything, but anything, any meal, chicken, fish, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even with things like risottos.
And you just squeeze it in.
Yeah. Love them.
And then some chorizo.
Yeah.
And you've got chorizo and chorizo like bites.
Yes, chorizo bites. So they are, you know what I am trying to cut down on my meat consumption. And I think,
well, you're South African.
It's
in your blood.
But what I do find sometimes when you just want a meat flavor, but you don't necessarily want meat, mm-hmm. you know, I use things like pancetta or chorizo mm-hmm. to just give a flavor without mm-hmm. being...
So in a dish that could have been vegetarian, but then with a bit of chorizo
on
top.
Like soups, I often do a little bit of, like I'll do a beautiful like white bean and tomato and chili mm-hmm. soup, and then just sprinkle a little bit of chorizo.
I do a lot of that sort of thing as well.
So I just need to get this chicken out of the pot. I've managed to not throw the stock away, which is always good news.
So you're just lifting the entire chicken
out of the pot.
All of this veg now is done.
It's done. Yeah, I'm just going to get the last of the stock into this pot here. And get all of that in there. And then throw the kind of vegetables that were in the stock away.
It smells delicious.
Grab some water.
So did you taste this at all as you were cooking?
No, but I just realized I actually didn't. I literally have zero idea what is going
to
go on.
Let's find out.
Let me get in before you do.
I bet it will need some salt. Ooh. No, it's really good.
It's really good, right?
Mm.
I'm so relieved. Thank God.
It's so comforting.
Yeah.
It's just such a...
It's a perfect lunch because you feel full without feeling gross. You know, there's that sometimes you can...
No, it's just a really... There aren't too many flavors going on. You don't taste the miso at all. It's really just for kind of breadth of flavor. Mm. Does that sound winky? Breadth of flavor. But yeah, you, you don't taste the miso. It just adds to the depth.
Dimension, yeah, absolutely.
And then you can really taste the chicken,
yeah,
which is rare, I think, because usually chicken is kind of a...
I know what you mean, almost a base flavor. Well, not even, it's almost like
it's just
a carrier.
Conduit.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
It's a carrier for the curry or for the, you know.
Yes.
But you can actually taste the chicken, which is lovely, and the veg. Delicious. Mm. Thank you.
Mm. Yeah, but you're right, it probably does need a bit of salt.
You can get Sally's recipe for chicken soup, courtesy of my friend Lizzie Loves Healthy, at friendswithrecipes.org. And Sally can be found on Instagram as Manifesto Woman. You can find this podcast on Instagram as Friends with Recipes. Please share, subscribe, rate, and review this podcast as it makes a real difference and is truly appreciated. A big thanks to Sally for being on the show. Before I left, Sally wanted to read me the review that she'd left on iTunes for the podcast.
Load of rubbish. I can't believe she's doing this.
I mean, I kind of wish I had asked her before having her on the show, but too late now. Tune in next week for another episode of Friends with Recipes. See you then.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.